Welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm Charlie Sykes. Today's episode is brought to you by Simply Safe. And just a quick reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast anywhere where they have podcasts, on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. I get emails from people all the time saying, why don't you mention this particular platform? It's because I can't keep up with them all. But I'm presuming that if you are sophisticated enough to want to listen to this podcast, then you're probably savvy enough to figure out how to subscribe so you don't miss anything. And of course, by missing anything, I mean a news cycle that just does not let up. And joining us today to talk about all of this is Amanda Carpenter, who is a CNN contributor. You've been around, right?
I've been around the block, Charlie.
Well, you know, you and I were just talking beforehand about, the kinds of things that went on during the Ted Cruz campaign. My thought about that was, oh my God, that feels like just a different lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, our paths tangentially crossed during the Cruz campaign, although, you know, we've never met in real life.
That's true.
But I think we share so much background in that you come from conservative radio media. I came to Washington through conservative print media in terms of working for The Washington Times, Human Events, townhall.com, and then going to Capitol Hill. And we have both been aghast.
Yeah.
At what has taken place with the Republican Party. You know, I don't think either of us really trusted the Republican Party as an institution, but how easily they fell in line behind Donald Trump, who just doesn't represent what my values were, and certainly not yours either.
Yeah, for people who aren't part of this movement, I mean, you may have heard us say this, but there's that sense of disorientation that doesn't go away, and it continues on a regular basis. I mean, there's like not a day goes by that you don't go, okay, how did that happen? How did that guy flip over? How did I'm sure you get the blowback as well. Well, you built this. You're responsible for this. And maybe there's some truth to that. But boy, there's not a direct line between what we were doing then and Donald Trump. Okay, let's start off with this. Okay, the president's tweet, the never Trumper.
Which one?
Well, I want to do the one. I'm looking at the cartoon version of this, and this is great. There's a website that actually puts Red Skull or whatever. Puts the president's words. So this is pretty awesome when I'm reading the cartoon version of this, which is really the president. This is a direct quote from the president of the United States. The never-Trumper Republicans, though on respirators with not many left, are in certain ways worse and more dangerous for our country than the do-nothing Democrats. Watch out for them. They are human scum.
Wait, hold on. I'm breathing fine. Are you breathing fine?
I'm okay.
Are you feeling fresh and clean?
Yeah. It's
sleeping well at night, unlike many of the people that work for this administration, I suspect.
Human scum. Now, so somebody pointed out that, remember the president's reaction to the demonstrators in Charlottesville? Those were, very fine people. But we are human scum. Human scum.
But, he's outrageous. We know that. We can shrug. But the reasoning that he has behind this tweet is it weighs heavily on Donald Trump and his supporters that he's never been able to bring people like us along, right? He won. Get over it. We didn't, because the man's personal character flaws are so deep and so damaging and show themselves in almost every flawed aspect of his administration. I mean, there's a reason why character matters. And the character he displayed on the campaign was so abysmal. I mean, pick the controversy, whether John McCain wasn't a war hero, grabbing by the pee, insulting whoever. A man who has no personal boundaries should never have been trusted with the awesome power of the presidency. And now we have to come to grips with dehumanizing, denigrating policies like child separation at the border. A person who has compassion would not have gone as far as he did with the zero tolerance policy, where the cruelty was infamously the point. A man with compassion would not shrug his shoulders when our Kurdish allies are being slaughtered in the sand that we're not supposed to care about. I mean, you can see how this plays out. And, I don't want to say I told you so, but we all knew this. You just thought that maybe if you closed your eyes and wished hard enough, he would get better. Guess what? He didn't.
Okay, so why have all of our friends not seen that? Going back to our original point. I mean, you're right. It was completely predictable. He turns out to be exactly who we thought he was going to become. But they've not only bought in, they have doubled down on the investment. And over the next 12 months, they're going to have to contort themselves even more dramatically. So again, how do you explain your friend?
Well, the people that defend him openly are winnowing. I mean, show me the number of people who don't get a paycheck directly from him or from being associated with him who are willing to hold themselves out and defend him, right? There is a reason why so many members of the military, intelligence, and diplomatic communities have been blowing the whistle so hard it sounds like a never-ending screech, right? It's not every day that Admiral Bill McRaven comes out and says the president is a threat to the republic. And so while I do have a lot of frustration with the people who are left by his side, I don't think they're the majority anymore. I really don't.
Yeah, but they're willing to play the mm-hmm. anti-Trump card or the whataboutism card or the latest iteration
those
of Hillary's
emails.
Those two
things are both diseases.
Okay, a couple points though on this. I actually, there are some people who are offended by the human scub thing, and trying to pointing out that this is the way authoritarians deal with their opponents. I'm more amused by it. I kind of see it as a badge of honor. But
I saw his press secretary Stephanie Grisham, who only speaks to Fox News.
Effective
press secretary, she can't speak to the press. Doubling down on it, saying, "Well, you know, they deserve it," and I just feel sorry for her. It's like, have fun with your legacy, sister. Have fun dealing with this the rest of your life. It doesn't even bother me. I just feel pity for the people who are so trapped or just so short-sighted, they can't see what long-term damage they're even doing to themselves.
Yeah, but people will forget about that when she's on Dancing with the Stars.
Hey, if that's the end stop, fine. Have fun. Don't break a leg.
Okay, so
literally.
But what is interesting though is the way that the Never Trumpers, the remaining small little band of responded. Nobody that I've seen, is frightened by this or cringing mm-hmm. in shame. And I think that's worth noting because so much of the Republican Party, particularly the elected wing, seems to live in fear of one of these angry Trump tweets, right? But we're going to be just fine. Mm-hmm. With all of that. Also, I think they're going to have to make up their minds on this. I mean, are we on respirators and irrelevant, or are we even worse and more dangerous? There seems to be a little bit of an internal contradiction. In my newsletter, I quoted David Beiler, our old colleague who works now at the Washington Post. He said, it feels like Trump and company should have to pick between A, never Trump Republicans are extinct and laughable and defeated, and B, never Trump Republicans are extremely powerful and dangerous and capable of foiling all of the president's plans.
Well, I would say, for the elected Republicans, they've given up on trying to explain or justify Trump's mean tweets. Like they threw their hands up a long time ago on that. But where they do have to pick a side is on things like the pullout in Syria. I was surprised to see the number of Republicans willing to come out and speak about that. And no, the people who didn't suffer any repercussions. I didn't see mean tweets about that. And so maybe they are starting to get over it. But, the more important question is going to be straight up. Do you believe the president should use his executive powers to withhold military aid in exchange for election help? I mean, that's the big question where I think people are starting to test the waters on speaking out against the president, because Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz can, whatever they did, invading the SCIF the other day, they can do that, but they can't avoid that question at the end of the day unless the Democrats somehow screw it up.
Which
and that's
capable
what they're all secretly
doing.
Hoping for. Oh, totally. 100%.
Okay, so this really gets to, you have a new book out about gaslighting. What's the full title?
My book is Gaslighting America, Why We Love It When Trump Lies to Us. And I originally started writing this when I was stuck in my hotel room during the Democratic convention. And in my mind, it was going to be a book about how Donald Trump gaslit the Republican Party. And it would end with his loss. And I talked to some publishers and they said, well, we're not really interested. It seems like more of a media critique. We don't think there's a lot there. Okay, so what? So I put my storyboard notes away and then he won. And so then HarperCollins came back and said, well, do you still think there's something here? And I said, are you kidding me? Now he has the White House behind him, the RNC, and all Republican Congress. Of course the gaslighting is going to continue, but on a much grander scale. I mean, he got started with this in birtherism against Barack Obama. Barack Obama was a citizen, but he seized on this narrative that started, you know, in 2008 when Obama came on the national scene that he wasn't a citizen. And this is what Donald Trump always does. He doesn't come up with these conspiracies on his own. He grabs something that's out there floating around Breitbart or Free Republic, you know, you name it. And then he decides to dive into it. And then he threatens to have investigations and keep the story going and stay tuned. In 2 weeks, we'll have more. And along the way, he creates a media firestorm where he forces people into a box. He forced Obama to produce those papers eventually. And what did he do? Did he say, oh, I was wrong? No, he held a press conference and said, Hillary Clinton started it. I finished it. Essentially, I win. Now everyone thank me.
Okay, now so here's the big question. Your subtitle is why we love it when Trump lies to us. This seems to be an important distinction because yes. Politicians who lie are not a new phenomenon. You know, and people have lied to. What it seems to feel new is that we have a large segment of the American public that knows that it's a lie, knows they're being lied to, and are okay with it, don't care about it. So why do we do it? First of all, do we actually love it when Trump lies to us? That's
different
a radical
people
statement.
Love it for different mm-hmm. reasons, mm-hmm. right? So gaslighting isn't just lying, because as you pointed out, politicians lie all the time. Gaslighting is a gross manipulation. You have to be so shameless in doing it that you make your opponents doubt their own reality, right?
Right.
And then get caught up in trying to refute what they patently know is untrue. And once you start doing that, you're stuck, right? And it gets so overwhelming. And I think we all experience this, that you only want to end up doing one or two things. This person is spewing these lies, going on and on. Everyone's getting wrapped up in it. And you want to point your finger and say, this man is crazy. Stop listening to him. Mm-hmm. And then he turns around and says, oh, that woman's hysterical. Or you give up. You say, I can't take it anymore.
Right.
I'm not going to engage. And you walk away. And either way, Trump wins.
So what do Trump's core supporters think about this? They know that he's lying. Mm-hmm. So when they hear this stuff, how do they react to it?
They see a nobility.
A nobility?
A nobility in doing what it takes to win. That's what it all boils down to, right? We won. Get over it. I was reminded of this when I read the news reports about Mick Mulvaney being applauded by his White House staffers for his disastrous quid pro quo press conference last week. And people ask me, well, why would they do that? It wasn't good. I said, you don't understand. They've so barricaded themselves. They think it is noble to go out and try to defend the president at all costs, even if you make mistakes, because they see themselves as the victims. They see themselves taking the slings and arrows, and they think they're on this noble cause where they see something greater than the president at stake, which is the future of the country. And I think, you know, you and I can be sympathetic towards that. But in doing this, they aren't improving the state of our union. But yet they've convinced themselves they're going to do it. And they see a higher cause than looking bad in the media or impressing Trump.
So this explains why, you know, people who oppose him, you know, Never Trumpers and also the folks on the resistance on the left, think mm-hmm. that sooner or later, all the lies, all the fake narratives and the conspiracy theories are going to bring him down. And you point out, no, these things are not going to destroy him because
his lies are his greatest strength.
Oh, God.
I don't know of any other person that could be so shameless and deliberate and cruel in spreading the lies that he does. And we as a society have no known coping mechanism. to keep up with it. I mean, it gets down to some basic psychology. When you talk to somebody on the street, say you're lost and you ask somebody for directions, would you expect them to lie to you? No, probably not. You might get a second opinion, but you can't go through life expecting someone to lie to you all the time. We are inclined to believe people first when they speak. That's just human nature. And so when he just keeps this up, it has a exhausting effect.
It does.
But I think after Trump, we're all going to go through PTSD, post-Trump stress disorder.
But usually we have no coping mechanism. We used to have a coping mechanism, which was skepticism, which was holding people accountable, that if you do business with somebody or have a relationship with somebody who lies to you, you don't trust them. You don't do business with them anymore. If a politician is caught in a lie, you defeat them, right? If you're in a relationship, you may give them another chance, but it's probably going to affect your relationship. So those were the coping mechanisms. None of those seem to apply to Donald Trump.
Right. We can't divorce Trump. We're stuck with him for the 4 years, unless, you know, if we get to the impeachment thing. But there was the binary choice argument, which I didn't love, against Hillary Clinton. I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. I left the top blank. But his supporters looked at Hillary, looked at Bill, looked at the lies he told to get out of the Monica Lewinsky scandal and said, yep, we want a bully of our own. We want someone who's going to go to the wall. I mean, this looks, you would understand this, seeing the evangelicals get behind Trump. They knew he wasn't in the pews with him. They knew he wasn't a man of faith. But they made the calculation, you know what? We need a bully of our own to protect us.
It is hard to overstate the impact of the Clinton years now, that we're still in the hangover from that. And that sort of, I'm trying to think what Jonah Goldberg called this sort of the envy that people on the right had. Wow, you folks on the left, you got away with this because you were willing to do this. And I think they exaggerated it somewhat. Okay, so I want to go back to the whole gaslighting thing, because I feel this is really timely today, because earlier this morning, I'm listening to the president's press conference on Syria, where he's talking about the great outcome in Syria. You know, where he's talking about this is an outcome created by us, the United States, nobody else, very simple. Everything is wonderful. Turkey, Syria and all the forms, and the Kurds have been fighting for centuries. We've done them a great service. We've done a great job for all of them. You know, this is almost a perfect example, isn't it, of gaslighting. The president has presided over a foreign policy disaster, bipartisan condemnation, possibly horrific consequences with the rise of ISIS. And yet he stands and he looks at the American people and he tells them, it's wonderful, it's great, it's one of the most brilliant things I've ever done.
Yeah, it's truly Orwellian. He is standing at the podium with the full force of the executive branch behind him, asking the American people to believe him over the facts, over the images that you can see with your eyes, that you can hear with your ears, the emotion that you can feel if you happen to watch those videos of the Syrian woman being drugged from her car, shot and raped, which are all over the place. So you have to put that all aside and say, sure, I believe the president. I mean, that's lighting yourself up with the gaslight with tons of kerosene.
Do you think it'll work, though?
I think enough people doubt him by now. Yeah. I really do. And it will come back to the binary choice in an election, unless we reach the tipping point and he's impeached, which I think is like a 25 or 30% chance
really?
At this point. Yeah.
That seems very...
Just depending at what
you
comes
out. You mean impeached
out.
And removed?
Yeah.
Okay, you're nothing to do with irrational exuberance. That seems like a very high percentage.
Well, I mean, it's still a slim chance, but if I were playing the lottery, I'd take a 30% chance for sure.
See, I'm pretty much at the slim and none on all of that because of exactly what you've described.
It depends on how the Democrats frame it. If all the evidence does come out, as I suspect it will, in that he was holding up military taxpayer-funded assistance to get election help, soliciting foreign. I mean, this is the Mueller report all over again. It's the same damn thing, right? Seeking foreign interference in an election. This is the game. He hasn't changed. And I do think, you know, I think there's a big problem doing impeachment in an election year.
Yeah.
But I don't see how you can let a president go forward to compete in a second presidential election when he's proven himself twice willing to cheat to win it.
Well, and the other
and
thing
so
is
I do think there's a way it can be framed. I don't know if the Democrats will do it that
way. Well, also, we don't know what other smoking guns, to use an overused phrase, are out there. You know, what transcripts of phone calls, you know, what it turns out that he said in some of those conversations with Vladimir Putin or Erdogan or President Xi.
The Turkey thing for we need to know what led to the Syrian pullout. It was erratic. He consulted no one. And you look at the two countries, Rudy Giuliani was fooling around in and getting paid mega bucks. It's Turkey and Ukraine. So we'll see what happens there. But I think there's places to be mined.
So I can see getting to 8 or 9 Republican votes. I can't count even close to 20. But okay, so what would it take for Ted Cruz? This is a guy you know, you've worked with. What would it take for Ted Cruz to vote to remove the president? Because I'm pretty much in the category of he's in too deep, he's gone too far, no way.
Oh gosh, I'm trying to think. I saw he was asked a question in the hallway the other day about something related to the investigation, and he said, call my press office.
I saw that
that question?
Yeah, it was one of those profiles in Courage. It was a pretty easy question. I actually tweeted about that at one point. It was an easy one about, you know what, I'm just going to have to look for it, you know.
Yeah, let's look for it. Because that was a moment where I said, oh.
Yeah. You said, oh.
He doesn't want to answer that one.
Yeah.
And he is a constitutional expert, as we all know. And if Ted Cruz, he knows the answer to this question. There's a reason why he didn't want to give it. And I didn't see any follow-up that his press office had clarified it any further.
So is there any scenario in which he votes to remove the president?
I mean, I think if it is clear that he abused power in such gross ways that not only violated the Constitution, but had an effect in hurting people in Ukraine, in Syria, I think that might push him over the edge.
Yeah, and you also had to have a critical mass. Okay, I found what it was.
Oh, gosh.
It was Cheryl Gay Stolberg asks Ted Cruz, Senator, the president called the emoluments clause phony today. Your phony emoluments clause. Do you have any reaction to that? Cruz, just call our press office. Come on.
I can assure you Ted Cruz knows what the Constitution says in emoluments.
Okay, so I want to stick with this issue of gaslighting and lying, including tying this into Mark Zuckerberg being beaten up on Capitol Hill. But also, I think the people who are listening so far to the podcast realize that you feel very, very personally, passionately on this issue. And I want to talk about that, too. But first, a word from our sponsor. Today's podcast is brought to you by Simply Safe. A recent Gallup survey shows that Americans worry more about burglary than almost any other crime, more than mugging, more than terrorism, more than car theft and murder. And what's crazy is that only 1 in 5 homes have home security. Maybe because most companies really don't make it that easy. And that's why Simply Safe is my top choice. Simply Safe protects your whole home, every window, room, and door, with 24/7 monitoring for just a fraction of the cost. Their police dispatch is up to 3.5 times faster because they use video verification. There's no contract, hidden fees, or fine print. It's designed to blend right into your home. No wires, no drilling. And it's really easy to order and easy to set up, usually in less than an hour. Simply Safe has won a ton of awards from CNET to the New York Times Wire Cutter, and prices are always fair and honest. Around-the-clock monitoring is just $15 a month. So visit simplysafe.com/bulwark. You'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You've got nothing to lose. Go now and be sure to go to simplysafe.com/bulwark so they know that our show sent you. That's simplysafe.com/bulwark. Okay, we are back with Amanda Carpenter, who is a longtime conservative activist, a CNN contributor, and the author of Gaslighting America, Why We Love It When Trump Lies to Us. And I think that this whole issue of lying and whether or not people care about it you know, is going to play such a huge role in the 2020 campaign, because remember we had that flood of fake news and the bogus stuff that was circulated on Facebook. And my sense is that 2020 is going to be 2016 times 10.
Yeah. I want to ask you, because as a fellow member of conservative media, I was very much disturbed about how easily these foreign actors and bots impersonated conservative media, right? Like, Democrats are mad, like, look at all this fake news. And I was watching it, and it's like, they're pretending to be me. I mean, not me personally, but they'd adopt these names and personas from, you know, rural counties in Michigan where I grew up. And like, they're pretending to be my neighbors. And I've never had an opportunity to like flesh that out.
Well, and the other thing was, I mean, I've told this story before, and I really felt the difference in 2016, because, you know, I've been doing my radio show for 20 years, and for 20 years, when people would forward, you know, bogus stories or things that were, you know, not true, I would be able to send them an email back and say, hey, by the way, you know, thanks for sending me this, but you know, that's not true, and here's the fact check on all of that. And people would usually go, hey, thanks, I appreciate that, I shouldn't have forwarded that email, or I shouldn't have tweeted, etc. But as 2016, you know, moved ahead, first of all, I got a much higher volume of that. It was worse and worse and worse. It was crazier, and was from, you know, these, you know, rising eagle patriot websites and things. And when I would, you know, push back on them, these are people I've known for years, say, you know, that's not true. Increasingly, I got two reactions. Number one, they would not accept any fact check from a mainstream media outlet. It was like, you know, oh, that's the New York Times or the Washington Post or NPR or NBC or CNN. So they were, it was an impermeable, you know, just a wall there. They were these alternative reality silos. And then at a certain point, it was also, and I don't care anymore. So here we have this moment of how to deal with it. We have this flood of false information. We have a large number of people who are very gullible, who believe it. But then we have this class of people who, as you say, really don't care, who actually love it when we lie to us. So, well, if you're Mark Zuckerberg, though, how do you handle this? He's on Capitol Hill yesterday, and they're grilling him on the policy where they're saying, we are not going to fact-check political ads, which means that if the Trump folks put $10 million of ads the weekend before the election saying that Elizabeth Warren, in fact, is part of, you know, a lesbian group, sex group, and we have all the pictures and stuff, that you know, that Mark Zuckerberg will say, as long as the check clears, we're going to be putting all those ads out there because that's not our job. And so the weaponization of lies would continue. So if you're Mark Zuckerberg, is that the right position?
No. I am to the point where I think almost everyone on a social media platform needs to be verified. You need to know that there is a real accountable person behind those pictures, those tweets, and maybe not for the everyday Joe, but if you are spending money on that platform, if you are participating in discourse that goes viral and has a lot of reach, then the people at Facebook or whatever platform need a way to contact you. And if there's a problem, to follow up with you to explain why something may be taken down or not. Because a lot of this, I mean, you mentioned the ScreamingEagle.net, you know, Patriot Liberty 25. Who knows who that is?
Okay.
And they have considerable reach. And this is the thing, the big divide between old media and new media is that you can go online and pretend to be a legitimate publisher. And I have seen this. You mentioned I grew up in Michigan, and there's been a ton of fake news on Facebook directed at Michigan voters for a long time, purporting to look like real news outlets. And it's not just political. My mom gets stories saying, oh, there's this terrible outbreak of some epidemic of some county upstate that doesn't exist, that gets people scared that there's some disease flowing. You know, and then they all start warning each other and saying, call the CDC, and it never happened. So I think Michigan has been tested for quite a long time. But with a traditional paper, you have editors, you have accountability. But with the online media, you have a nameless person spreading things that looks like news that can never be held accountable or followed up or made to justify what they do. And that is something Mark Zuckerberg has allowed to happen, profited from happen, and makes no apologies for. I just believe that is a huge problem. People can say what you want, but we should know who's saying it.
Okay, but in his position is on these political ads. So the Trump campaign itself, we know who they are, right? They're identified. What happens if they, on their own name, put out false ads? And his position is we are not going to, quote unquote, censor. We're not going to fact check all of those. That if you are a, you know, political campaign, quote, a legitimate political campaign, you can say anything on our site.
Yeah, I think that's crap. I think he's hiding behind worries of censorship to essentially just keep taking the money. He doesn't want to make a judgment. He is scared to make a judgment on the truthfulness of political ads. And I'm sorry, Mark, you have the most influential platform in the world. You have a responsibility to make judgment on the materials that thrive on that platform. And there's this whole, you know, they try to play between this distinction between saying I'm a platform and not a publisher. No, you are the single most far-reaching publisher of news on the internet. It's how people get their news. People get their news from social media. And so, you know, unless you're going to shut that down, you have to make a judgment just like everyone else in the news business does. You know, there's all kinds of FCC rules about judging the truthfulness of ads. And yeah, people have a right to air them. But we need to bring digital media standards more in line with traditional news standards. And that encompasses just a lot more balance in campaign finance rules that they've been desperately trying to avoid.
So I mentioned before you feel very strongly about this. I think people can tell this, but I want to talk about your story because, you know, you're a high profile political commentator and we're in 2016. You were publicly smeared by one of Trump's supporters on live television without a shred of evidence supporting the allegations. So, you know, for a lot of people, this is an abstract. Until you've experienced it, you don't really realize how awful it is. And you got your dose, didn't you? So
yeah,
it who smeared you on live television?
Well, there's backstory on that. And that, you know, now we know how deep Donald Trump's relationship goes to the National Enquirer, right? That wasn't fully fleshed out in 2016 when the National Enquirer published a story alleging that Ted Cruz had like five affairs with different women. There was no truth to it, but Roger Stone was quoted in the story. Everybody knows you need a quote to make a story. And his quote was, well, I don't know if this is true, but this would really hurt Ted Cruz with evangelicals. And so there was nothing to it. But what gave this story traction was on the cover of the National Enquirer, they had the images of five women with their faces sort of blurred out, right? And there was in the weeks to the run-up to this, you might remember.
I remember it very well.
There was this whole thing, Ted Cruz sex scandals coming. You know, there was like a witch hunt to get this going, which, you know, we get back to the Russian bots. I have never witnessed, in a way that I've been personally impacted, such a torrent of hashtags and tweets.
Okay. Stop you right there.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of this is really interesting to me because this was right before the Wisconsin primary. And a lot of the accounts of the campaign have downplayed this. Because it didn't work. You know, obviously Ted Cruz won in Wisconsin. But what you're saying is not an exaggeration. It was amazing to me. And this was one of those turning points where you suddenly had social media absolutely flooded with all of these tweets about the Ted Cruz affair. And it was being pumped out of the National Enquirer. It was being pumped out of what we now know must have been
those
hundreds
hashtags,
of bots.
They were going before the National Enquirer.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. People were pushing it. People were calling the Cruz campaign to see who these women were. People were, I had some reporters asking me about it before the story came out. So somebody was pushing this. They were pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the National Enquirer came out. Again, no evidence, no direct connection, but my picture was on the cover blurred out. Now, if you put a picture on the internet and you barely blur it out, it takes about 2 seconds for people online to figure out who it was. And the picture they used matched up directly with a picture that was on the cover of Roll Call of me for my work for Ted Cruz. And so the Inquirer was able to get my face into the story without actually naming me, which is pretty deceptive. And so they matched the pictures up, and then a sudden, and it was like an online witch hunt. Amanda Carpenter, what do you have to say for yourself? Amanda Carpenter had a pair of Ted Cruz. Never, ever, ever, ever happened. Never came close to happening. And, you know, a lot of the mainstream media, they didn't go for it because I knew people were looking into it. They didn't find anything. They didn't find it because there was nothing there. And so I was like, fine, this, you know, there's nothing to see here. But I'm still a CNN contributor. I'm still going to do my job because I knew the whole point was to try to get to hurt Ted Cruz primarily, but also to sideline me because I'm pretty good at what I do. I don't make apologies for that. I have been opposing Trump since the minute he came down the golden escalator because I saw who he was at the time, right? And I've never taken it back. And so I had a great gig at CNN, and I think people were upset about that. And so I just went in for a normal segment. It, like you said, it was between the Wisconsin and Indiana primaries. And I was on with a surrogate I hadn't even heard of before. But this happens. I mean, you do cable news. The people who defend Trump are normally very random. people who don't have a lot of other opportunities, quite frankly. And so we're doing a segment on polling. And she just jumps in and says, Amanda Carpenter, you were naming the National Enquirer as Ted Cruz's mistress. What do you have to say for yourself? And so, you know, of course, I said that's tabloid trash. It's categorically untrue. You know, if you have anything more to say, you can speak to my lawyer. Because they were dragging me down. And then at that point, it became a national news story because it happened on live television, Charlie. Everyone else was not going to write about it, not going to pay attention to it. But then the Cruz campaign had to put out a statement. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then Donald Trump had to put out a statement, which is the most Trumpy thing I think he's ever written. It was like, well, I hope it's not true. But remember, the National Enquirer is right about John Edwards. And by the way, Ted Cruz is a liar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very gracious, so, as I recall. And then I remember
I had to really fight. I mean, I've always conducted myself super professionally. I'm not someone that hangs out with parties. There's not going to be pictures of me hanging out with politicians. It just doesn't exist. But I had to lean on every ounce of credibility that I had built up over the years to ensure that, you know, I could keep my job at CNN. I mean, people get blown up out of these jobs all the time. And, you know, I had to go do an interview with Jake Tapper on TV to clear it up. And I did nothing wrong. And so when you talk about gaslighting, Donald Trump and his campaign trapped me into this fake reality, drug the whole world into it, and I had to fight my way out. And so people say, well, how do you stop the gaslighting? You're never going to stop him. He's going to do what he's going to do. But you can stand extremely firm in your truth. Don't give an inch. And if you can withstand it, you will get through it.
Yeah, you did get through it. And as I recall, that whole story just went away. It just completely went away. Nobody took it seriously. But I do remember watching you sitting there having that interview. And I remember thinking, this is so awkward. This is such, because of course, you know, I had been sitting in Wisconsin going, you know, I'm sorry, this story's bullshit. There's nothing to it. There's nothing about it. It's, you know, it's just a complete smear. But there you are, and you're on national television, having to answer the question, did you do this? It is sort of the other version. You know, you still beat your wife. You know, did you do this?
Yeah, it's a female version. Did you sleep with that guy?
Exactly. Yep. It was, and it really was an extraordinary moment. This was before Me Too. Otherwise, I think people would have gone, are you kidding me that a woman has to go and defend herself, answer that question on national television because you have a, you know, a political campaign that is pushing this out? I mean, I remember thinking this must be the most awful thing to have to go and have that interview and say, no, I did not do this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what was worse is that, you know, people, we talk about a lot through the Cruz campaign, but it was an attack on my marriage. I've got two kids, too small to know what was going on. But of course, my husband didn't believe it. Nobody believed it because I'm home every single night. I would never dream of doing anything like that. But this was an attack on my marriage. And I think the worst moment was, one, when I had to explain to my in-laws what and why this had happened. And like, honestly, they were like, what? National Enquirer? Who's Roger Stone? Huh? Why would people think that? You know, people would ask me, why would people think that? And how do I explain that? There's no reason. But the second worst moment was when my husband had friends from high school reach out to him and say, hey, man, sorry to hear what you're going through. Let me know if you need to talk. Like, is your marriage in trouble? Do you need somebody? And it's like, there's no trouble here. But, you know, watching people be sympathetic towards him, thinking that something we had that was so good is crumbling when it didn't. It's just like, it was all fake.
Well,
you know?
And, you know, as your book makes clear, and as we've learned over the last couple of years, in some ways that was kind of a dry run of what they could be capable of. I mean, just in terms of just putting out false information.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Scavino was pushing it, who is still the White House social media director.
Dan Scavino?
Uh-huh.
Hmm. Yeah, well.
I mean, online. It's not like information.
I'm thinking, you know, living in this world of no consequences when you're caught with something, you know, doing something like that. But in 2020, the technology exists. The moral universe exists. The people exist. The sense that we can get away with anything, you know, all of that means that anyone that they really want to smear, they can do it and probably do it in a more effective way than we've seen in the past. That we've gotten a taste of this.
Yeah, they gaslit James Comey. James Comey made mistakes in handling the various investigations, but they sought to sideline him. Listen, there was a legitimate Russia investigation, but they turned it inside out and made people believe it was a witch hunt. The only reason people were pursuing it was because they wanted to overturn the election, the 2016 election, and the historical Democrats didn't get over it. As if Don Jr. never met in Trump Tower with Russians offering information. As if Paul Manafort was never getting paid lots of illegal money from that part of the country. As if those other things didn't happen. And now they're doing it with the Ukraine investigation, right? They're trying to say, oh, we were doing something legitimate. You have it all wrong. You people are crazy. You're hysterical. And we're going to find the DNC server. Like, that is such a joke.
No, see, this is what's interesting. I thought it was interesting that Mulvaney was saying, you know, that that he was talking, that he making a distinction between we weren't asking for an investigation of Biden. What we were asking for is this investigation of the DNC server that's still in Ukraine, which is the craziest conspiracy theory. I mean, it is to say that it's debunked gives it too much credit. You know, and unfortunately, you want to talk about gaslighting, you know, when you see, and I'm sorry to mention one of your colleagues here, but, you know, former congressman from Wisconsin, you know, Sean Duffy going on the air and peddling this, I'm sorry, just flat out batshit crazy conspiracy theory that you almost can't get your head around because it's so nuts.
I was on with him for his first appearance, and I think people could tell I was aghast and baffled that he went there.
And you're not allowed to use words like batshit crazy on the air, though, are you?
I mean, I don't know. You can say more on cable news than I thought you could.
I know.
Although I don't.
I think I used the term shithole country once on cable, but you don't want to push it. So you were just
accurately quoting the president.
Well, that's right. You know, once the president says it, then it must be okay. Is that right? So are you optimistic or pessimistic? And the reason I'm saying this is that there's, once you've gone through the, you know, going back to your title of your book, you know, why we love it when Trump lies to us, you know, Trump himself is a liar. Fine. We got that. But I feel like he has changed something in the American character, in the American political culture. And I don't know how we fix that even after he leaves the scene. So are you optimistic or pessimistic?
Well, I mean, we'll have to see. Regardless of what happens, he is a permanent fixture now of American life, right?
Mm-hmm.
However he leaves the White House, he's going to go do Trump TV. He's going to try to be the next Roger Ailes, you know, running his hotels and propping up his kids. Like, okay, just we've got to come to terms with that. But in regards to how his legacy will be treated, I think it comes down to the ultimate calculation that Republicans made in supporting him. They rallied behind him against everything they believed before because he could win. The moment that he shows he can no longer win, it's over. People are going to pretend like they never knew this guy. If he can no longer provide the transactional benefits that they sought from him to begin with.
So they just simply turn the page and they pretend that they weren't part of this, that this wasn't them.
I think it could be like the Iraq War. How many Republicans are standing today who say that was a good idea? Mm-hmm. I think it can get memory hold just like George Bush largely has been.
Well, it is interesting, given our short attention spans and the fact that we can't even remember what happened last week, that's certainly absolutely plausible. Amanda Carpenter, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
And the book is Gaslighting America, Why We Love It When Trump Lies to Us. And Amanda Carpenter is also a CNN contributor. And thank you for listening to the Bulwark Podcast today. I'm Charlie Sykes. We'll be back tomorrow, and we will do this all over again.